Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 320. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about pine trees and beaches and pineapples as we go to the island of Lanai. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before I get into what is not an interview today, I have three news stories for you. And the first one, what do you do when you're jealous of your ex-boyfriend's new wife? If you said, send an email claiming that she's part of a terrorist plot to kill hundreds, that it's probably not the right answer. As a woman from the UK named Ahia Arbid learned, she is now on trial. Strange things in the UK. Up until St. Patrick's Day, you could stay in a temporary hotel that was made to look like Alcatraz. This, of course, was a publicity stunt for the TV show Alcatraz. And the third news story is a little more personal. I'm changing jobs. I'm leaving my job at TripAdvisor. The 2,700-mile commute proved to be a little too much after a while. That's going to mean some changes for the Amateur Traveler. I'm not necessarily going to have the time to spend on the show, but I will hopefully have some more money because I will be able to take ads again. I'm also looking seriously at getting an assistant. So if you're interested in that, drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can find links to our first two stories at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. It's been a while since I've been my own guest on the Amateur Traveler. And as I mentioned last week I recorded parts of the show on the island of Lanai in the state of Hawaii as a guest of the Lanai Tourism Board. And I wasn't sure at that time if I was going to actually do a show or yet another show in Lanai, because as I mentioned, there have been a show on the Amateur Traveler talking about Lanai and Molokai. But I ended up doing so many things that I thought it would be worthwhile to do. First thing I should say is this was a sort of press tour. I was there for a week, as I mentioned, as a guest of the Lanai Tourism Board, and that means it's a different kind of trip. For one thing, it's more of a work trip in some ways, because you're constantly having to write things down and catch people's names and think of story ideas and make sure you take pictures, and that makes it a little more work-like. And the other thing is you stay busier on this sort of trip. So this trip did not have as much time just lying on the beach enjoying the weather in Hawaii as I would recommend that you do when you go there. But because I was running around quite a lot, I also got a chance to see a lot of things and can give you some options that you may be interested in for your trip. So the first thing I should say is the name of the island is Lanai, and I had some questions about that before I went, but I have since learned that you do pronounce, as I suspected, every vowel in Hawaiian, and actually the name is often written with an apostrophe or another diacritical mark before the last I to indicate that it is in fact a separate syllable. So as I was flying in, the first surprise that I had for Lanai is there's not a lot of vegetation in much of the island. In fact, this is known as the Pineapple Island because at one time, Lanai was basically a great big pineapple plantation run by Dole Fruits, started by James Dole in the 1960s, and it provided at one point 75% of the world's pineapple, and much of it, in fact, canned pineapple, which is how, since Dole was the first one to start canning pineapple, he actually made pineapple more popular with people who hadn't really had it before. But now you'd be hard-pressed to find a pineapple plant on the island. In fact, I saw a few plants at the Cultural Heritage Center, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but that was really all that I saw. And much of the landscape for the island, I would say, is scrub brush with some pine forests, which I'll talk about in a bit. As I flew in, and I flew in on Island Air, and Island Air, I should mention a little bit, it's a little bit of an experience. If you're flying from Honolulu on Island Air, it's a little hard to find, for one thing. You just follow the signs to the gates in the 70s, because you'll find that your flight, according to the monitors, is somewhere in gate, literally it'll say 72 to 78 or something like that. It doesn't give you a specific gate number. And you run out of gates before you find it, because you run out of gates about 64, and you have to wait for somebody to come and walk you over to a different terminal. You have to walk on the edge of the tarmac to get there. And so that was a little odd, but I got over there on Island Air, and that's a very popular way to get there. The other popular way is to take a ferry from Maui. So many people who go to Lanai are actually just day tripping from a longer trip to Maui. And that's one thing to think about if you're interested in something I'm talking about. You don't necessarily have to do a whole visit to Lanai all by itself. The first surprise I had is when I realized that a lot of the people who were on this small plane that were coming over with me were hunters. And they weren't just hunters like casual hunters. They were talking about trips they had taken to go hunting in other parts of the world, because there were things a little disorganized because of weather on Island Air that day. And they were saying, well, this is nothing. You should see what it's like to go on Aeroflot, the Russian airline, because they had been in Russia doing some hunting of bear, I believe it was. Oh, that's nothing. That's nothing compared to Mongolian airline, where they're actually going to sit someone else's child on your lap. And this was my introduction to Lanai. Is kind of Hawaii's small town, I want to say. So if that is appealing to you, then this is an island that I think you will like. Or if luxury is appealing to you, I'll talk about that a little later, I think this is also an island that you will like. But if you're looking, for instance, for the dynamic crowds of Honolulu, this is not an island you should go to, because the people who I ran into who loved Lanai, who come back every year, who come regularly, like the quiet of it. They like the small town nature of it. They like the fact that it is not like Waikiki. So let's say that up front. And so hunting, for instance, is more common than I expected. And I actually had a chance not to go hunting, but to do something similar, which I'll talk about later. So I stayed the first night. And I stayed in three different places in the island. They wanted me to see three different parts of the island. And there is a beach part of the island, which is like a regular beach resort kind of area. Not a large one, but a nice beach nonetheless. And then also the Lanai City. And I say city, but it's really a small town. It's about 3,000 people, which is the only city on the island. And you can easily walk from one side to the other. Most of the city is arranged around the Dole Park, which is the central park in town. And then really starting right next to Lanai City is more of the upcountry ranching area. And I stayed in all three places. There are three main hotels you can stay in the island. So again, a small island. Plus there are, I understand, some bed and breakfasts. And you can also camp on the island. Down by the beach, there are some camping opportunities. To get around, you're going to get around either by shuttle. And the whole island, I should mention, is still a privately held island. 95% of the island is owned by Castle and Cook. And Castle and Cook runs a shuttle service. The shuttle service will cost you $40-something dollars a week to get around to the various parts of the island. Specifically, you're really going between the upcountry resort, which is the Four Seasons Lanai Lodge at Koele, or the beach resort, which is the Four Seasons Lanai at Manele Bay. And then the lodge is right next to Lanai City, and so you also get a chance to take the shuttle there. Or you can rent a car. There are car rental services on the island. And if you rent a car on the island, you're probably going to want to rent a Jeep, because most of the roads on the island are not paved. There are a few paved roads, basically three, and then there are a lot of different unpaved roads on the island. And so this is an island that is a good island to go to if you want to get outdoors, and outdoors in a couple different ways. So I had a chance to stay three places for six nights on the island. The first two nights at a moderately priced hotel, the Hotel Lanai. Room started about $100. And then the next two nights at the Lodge at Koele. And then the last two nights down at the beach at the Four Seasons Lanai Manele Bay. The second two are luxury experiences, and they are therefore more expensive. The lodge starts at about $345 a night, not counting any special deals. They're doing like a deal right now, every third night free. And the Four Seasons down at the Bay starts at about $445 a night, again, without any special deals. They're doing a deal right now, every fourth night free. So those are luxury experiences. The other one is a historic lodge. There is three parts of the history that I want to mention in the island. One is obviously the Polynesian history, which starts fairly late. Lanai'i wasn't inhabited until the 1400s. The first 200 years that people were on Maui, they would look across the straits to Lanai'i, and you can easily see one from the other. And they thought that ghosts lived on Lanai'i. They thought that spirits lived there. And so it wasn't until a famed Lanai'i son of a king, Kuelo, who was basically banished to the island because he kept pulling up trees or something like that. There was an odd story about that. He was a prankster. He gets sentenced over the island, theoretically, to die because you can't live on this island. And he defeats the spirits and sends a signal back to the island, and he's welcomed back into the tribe, and people then settle on Lanai'i in the 1400s. And so there was a relatively small population of Polynesians on the island. Skipping a bit, the island was purchased later on and was used as ranching area, especially for sheep. And Mufon sheep are one of the things that those hunters on the plain had come to hunt. Mufon sheep and then also deer. Deer were introduced to the Hawaiian Islands as a gift to King Kamehameha. And they were introduced first to Molokai and then later to Lanai'i. Now there's 3,000 deer on Lanai'i that have no natural predators. And so the hunting is the only thing that keeps the sheep and the deer population in check. They actually have denuded a lot of the island of their natural foliage. And so the island doesn't have a lot of natural foliage, and a lot of that is there has been reforested. And some of the reforesting started with the ranchers, interestingly enough. In fact, one of the names that's significant historically on the island, George Monroe, was a New Zealander who comes over to manage the ranch and ends up planting trees in the island. All over the island, if you see a tall pine tree, it's a Cook Island pine tree. It was planted in the early 1900s by George Monroe or his crews as they tried to reforest the island. And one of the reasons they did that was that a Cook Island pine, this tall, kind of odd-looking pine tree, captures a lot of moisture and returns it to the water table, and there's really not a lot of, there is at this time on Lanai'i no surface flow of water. There's no rivers, which is odd because, as we said later on, they planted a lot of pineapple on this island. This was the Pineapple Island, 75% of the world's pineapple, and pineapple needs a lot of water. So one of the reasons why the pineapple is not here anymore is the cost of labor, but also the need for water moved off that production mostly to the Philippines. Coincidentally, a lot of the population of Lanai'i is Filipino, who came to work in the fields, the pineapple fields. Originally, some of the people who came to work on the island were Japanese or Chinese, but later on, mostly from the Philippines. So when you do get there first, I would encourage you to spend some time just walking around the town. It does not take that long, as I said, to walk around the town to explore some of the little shops that are there, maybe check out one of the restaurants or two. In terms of the restaurants in town, I would recommend the Blue Ginger, which I thought was the better of all the restaurants that I found in town in the town square proper. And then probably the nicer restaurant in town is the one at the Hotel Lanai'i where I was staying. There is a grill, the Lanai'i City Grill, at the Hotel Lanai'i. If you're there on a Friday night, that is the happening place with live music, which is where they brought me. But if you're in town on a Sunday night, you'll want to go to the Blue Ginger because it's the only thing open. There really isn't a lot of other things open in town. Again, it is a small town. And most of the people I met who live and work on the island, one of the things that drew them was this small town feel, the ability to basically leave your car keys in your car, to have a safe place to raise kids. One person joked that, yeah, we used to have a thief in the island, but he left. So it is that sort of island. In terms of things to do, we mentioned getting out into the outdoors. We'll talk about beach later, but let's talk about upcountry. So I had a chance to do some exploring, and again, as part of the itinerary that Charity from the Lanai'i Tourism Board set up for me. And the first thing I did is I did a four-wheel drive tour of the island, and you can either get your own Jeep, as I mentioned, or you can go on a tour, and I went on a tour with Bruce from the one company that does four-wheel drive tours of the island. And we went out to a couple key spots. And the first of those is The Garden of the Gods, and I should use the Hawaiian name or Bruce will get mad at me. But the problem is Hawaiian names, if you don't know, the Hawaiian alphabet only has, I think it's 12 letters total, and most of them vowels. And so you get these very long words that make it really hard to see street signs and react in time. But the real Hawaiian name of this place is Keahiakauelo. Keahiakauelo. And that is a spot where the Hawaiians believed that these pebbles or great big boulders had dropped out of the gardens of the gods somewhere. And so it is a volcanic spot, or it is a formerly volcanic spot, kind of like the surface of the moon or the surface of Mars is really what it looks like, an interesting spot. And it's way up on the northwest corner of the island, which is also a very, very windy part of the island, as in I thought I was going to slam my hand in the door getting out of this Jeep because of the strong winds. Winds are normally stronger, Bruce was telling me, in December, but we were having a particularly windy day. There were some weather storms that were moving through. It was also, though, clear enough that we could see from there over to both Molokai as well as to Maui and even see the summit of Haleakala, which is the volcano or the taller of the volcanoes on Maui and usually covered in clouds. You could really see from that spot that if you looked across the channel between Maui and Molokai is open to the trade winds, and therefore lots of white caps were there. And we mentioned if you take a ferry from Maui to Molokai, it's a rough ride. But the ferry that goes to Lanai goes in the shadow of Haleakala, and therefore it's a smoother ride. Because again, Lanai is in that rain shadow or wind shadow from Maui. So that was one of the interesting spots, was this Keahiakauelo. And then one of the other spots that's fairly well known is Shipwreck Beach. And Shipwreck Beach, there is a ship that is wrecked that is quite obvious, but that's not what the beach is named for. The shipwrecks actually started way back in the 1500s on the island, and a lot of ships were wrecked because they were blown downwind here from that gap between Molokai and Maui that just acts to funnel the wind straight at Lanai. But again, now there is this ship that was sunk by the army back in the 1940s, just off the shore there. It's a part of the island where some of the locals will go camping. Not a lot of facilities on that end of the island, though. There are some petroglyphs also, though, some Polynesian petroglyphs near Shipwreck Beach, which we did not get a chance to see on this trip. Normally, one of the other places you can go is you can go on the ridge of the island or the spine of the island, which would have been the edge of the old caldera, and that would be on Monroe Trail, named after that rancher that we mentioned previously, who planted, if you look, all of these Cook Island pines there on the ridge of the island. But they had just had a lot of rains, and so you really couldn't get up there. And also, the other road that had washed out is on the northeast corner of the island. There's also an old town that predates Lanai City, but the roads were impassable to get there as well. The other chance I had to get out into that sort of north corner of the island was on a horse. I had a chance to do a horseback ride from the stables there near the lodge at Ko'ele, and Ko'ele was built basically on the original sites of the ranches in Lanai. And the stables are part of that complex. And we went up along the ridge over to the windier side of the island. And I don't recall being on a horseback before, I should say. This was a trip that stretched my comfort zone, doing a lot of things that I had not planned on doing that I had never done before, including getting on a horse. And I mentioned Jesse by name. If I get a chance, I'm going to post a video I shot. Jesse is also a singing cowboy. And so after we did the ride, he serenaded me and some of the other guests who were there with one of his own personal songs. And I'll put that up on the blog when I get around to it. And then probably of the three chances I had to get up there in the North Country, the one that was the most interesting and probably the most fun and the most surprising for me was a ride and shoot. Now, this sounded to me like something out of Mad Max, but it turns out that ride and shoot had nothing to do with riding and shooting at each other or anything like that, but they have these all-terrain vehicles, UTVs, I'm not sure what the U stands for, and you rode, or in my case, I got a chance to drive this up again over to the windier side of the island, and on the windier side of the island, there is a sporting clay facility, the Lanai Pines Sporting Clays, and if you're not familiar with sporting clays, it's a little bit like skeet shooting in the sense that you have a machine, you say pole, there's a machine, it throws a clay out there and you shoot it with a shotgun. Again, I'd never fired a shotgun before and was a little apprehensive about this. The difference between sporting clays is they have 14 different stations in this place. And as they described it, it's sort of like golf with a shotgun. Because you'd go to a station, and literally you're riding a golf cart, just to make the analogy more perfect, and you ride to a station, and this particular station throws the clay up and over in an arcing pattern, and you have to shoot it when it's at the high point. This other station rolls it around the ground from right to left in front of you as if it were a rabbit, and another station has this clay that is shooting out from underneath you as if you had just scared up a bird, and it's supposed to mimic the patterns of different animals or birds at these different stations, and you're using a shotgun to blow these clay discs, which are actually fertilizer when you destroy them, to little tiny pieces. And I'm a city kid. Again, never ridden a horse. You probably got that clue. I never fired a gun before other than a BB gun as a kid. I'd fired a lot of toy guns before, but it was surprisingly fun, and I was actually surprised that Frankie Fernandez, who is the son of one of the people who came over from the Philippines to work in the fields, the plantation, back in those days, Frankie was my tour guide as well as my instructor in how to fire a shotgun without causing injury to anything other than a piece of clay. And he was a very good instructor, and I was surprised that I was actually able to hit maybe 50% at some of the different stations. And much to my surprise, I enjoyed the experience. I was a little, again, this is one of those things I probably wouldn't have done if I hadn't been going over there on this press trip-like affair where they really want me to try things out and they really want me to see the different things to do in the island. One of the reputations that Lanai has is that there's not enough to do there. My problem was there's a little too much to do there, and so it would have been nice to have some more downtime. I didn't get a chance to do two things on the island, unfortunately. One is I was scheduled for a hike up along the Monroe Trail, and that just didn't work out because the guide had to cancel because of some double scheduling. And then the other thing is I was scheduled to go to some of the sheer cliffs. At the base of them is some wonderful snorkeling, I'm told, on a dive boat with the Trilogy, and do some snorkeling. And that did not work out also. But later on, I did get a chance to do a snuba experience down by the beach, down by the Manele Bay Resort. There's this large beach, and we went out snubaing. And I don't know if you've ever done snuba. I had not. And it seems like, I'm going to call snuba the gateway drug for scuba, because basically you're using a scuba regulator and it's hooked to a tank. It's just that there's a long 20-foot hose between you and the tank. So you have your mask on, you have your fins on, you have a weight belt on so that you can sink just like you would have in scuba, but you don't have a tank on your back, instead just a long tube that's going up to the surface where this tank is on a raft. And I've gone scuba-ing once, and it wasn't all that comfortable for me. I was a little claustrophobic when I was doing it. I did it in the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. And I actually found that with this snuba experience, it was very comfortable. I got very used to the regulator. I got used to manipulating my buoyancy. Once we got out past where the waves were breaking, there was good enough visibility at the beach so that there was some interesting snorkeling or interesting snubaing. And I'm going to have to try scuba again. It actually was something that was interesting to try that. And now I'm going to have to try scuba next time I get an opportunity, I think. I also had a chance to take a ukulele lesson while I was there and learned to play, of course, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is, I believe, the traditional, at least now, the traditional ukulele song. And then the other thing that I particularly enjoyed is I went to the Cultural Heritage Center there in Lanai City, right next to the Lanai Hotel, and learned some of the history of the island and learned some about the plantation era. They had some exhibits about what people wore as they were picking pineapple. For instance, you wore heavy clothing because pineapple was very prickly, and then you also wore eye protection because if you bent down and poked yourself in the eye with a pineapple, that would be bad. And then they had some artifacts from the Polynesian history of the island, and when I get a chance, I'll put up a video actually of one of the people at the Cultural Heritage Center doing a Polynesian chant, which was very interesting to hear. So those gives you some idea of things to do on the island, other than, of course, just lying on the beach and enjoying the wonderful weather there. When I say wonderful weather, so I was there here in the month of March, and I didn't bring a coat. I looked at the weather reports. I think one of the evenings, it would have been nice to have something a little warmer. And during the days, it got warm enough that it'd be nice to have short sleeves or shorts. But it really was kind of in that range. The water at the beach was about 75 degrees, so a little chilly as you went in, and then easy to adapt to. So beautiful weather. The people who live in Lanai City, most of them don't have heaters in their homes. When it gets down to 50 degrees, they freeze. They just really aren't used to anything colder than that, or even 50 degrees is very uncomfortable. It's just a warm tropical trade winds there, warm tropical trade winds coming across the island. Places to stay. Let me talk a little bit about the three places that I stayed. The Hotel Lanai, I really enjoyed. It reminded me of some of the bed and breakfasts that my wife stay at. We stay at Victorians down in Pacific Grove. It's not that style, but it's that era. It's basically built by James Dole to house the guests who came to look at this plantation. It only has 11 rooms. That's counting one cottage. And it's a very historic structure, very warm and cozy. Again, not too expensive, wonderful restaurant in there. The restaurant's a little bit expensive. Everything on the island in terms of food is going to be a little more because it's a little more expensive to bring things over. So if you go to the store and you bought a gallon of milk, it's going to be like $9. So don't be too surprised if a dinner or a restaurant's going to be a few more dollars. And then the restaurants in the Four Seasons or the restaurant here at the Hotel Lanai is going to be more than that. The Four Seasons at Lodge Coile, again, I said this is a luxury experience. And you sort of know it's a luxury experience from the moment you check in. You go to check in, and they say, okay, have a seat. Okay, I just wanted to check in. I don't know why I'm having a seat. And they come over with a hot cloth to wipe the trip off you and a glass of course pineapple juice. And the lodges are probably best known by golfers because there are two championship golf courses on the island. One was designed by Jack Nicklaus and the other one by Greg Norman. And so if you're a golfer, Lanai is a destination. The lodge also had very beautiful gardens, including a greenhouse with orchids in it. And the person who owns most of the island now, who owns Castle and Cook and 95% of the land, has a collection of art that is on display in both the two Four Seasons, but also had a collection of orchids. And so there's this orchid hothouse out in these lovely gardens behind the lodge. I mean, really, truly spectacular gardens. And there's also croquet grounds and lawn bowling, as well as the usual pool and those sort of things as well. There are cultural activities there. That's actually where I took the ukulele lesson. And while I was there earlier in the week, there was a chamber quintet that were playing some pieces that were modern pieces. And one of them was a Polynesian story that was narrated and then was accompanied by this chamber quintet. So interesting things going on in the lodge. So that's the Four Seasons Lanai Lodge at Coile that is up in where the ranches used to be. And then again, the next one is the more expensive one, the more exclusive one, which is the one down at Manele Bay. And that is more of a traditional Hawaiian resort because you're right there on the beach. A lot of people just hang out by the pool and the bar and the beach. And again, one of the golf courses is there and one of them is up the hill. The golf course that is there by the beach is this spectacular golf course. Even if you're not a golfer, you should go out and see this. And on hole 12 of that golf course is, for instance, where Bill and Melinda Gates were married. So we're appealing to a higher-end clientele with that. They showed me the nicest room in the lodge. I did not stay in it. It is $9,000 a night, and it is truly spectacular, wonderful view, probably not that much better than the view I had from my room, which was less than that. And you can also open up so that you can sit in your jacuzzi inside your room and look out at the view as well. So if you've got $9,000 a night to spend, you might think about that. If you're looking for something a little less expensive, again, I'm told that there are B&Bs and, in fact, you can camp at the beach. To eat, again, high-end restaurants at Hotel Lanai at both of the two Four Seasons, wonderful, good food. You're going to be spending more for dinner, so think $30 to $50 per person by the time you're finished once you've included beverages and those sort of things, or there are less expensive restaurants in town. Now, if you've listened to the show for a long time, you know that the real luxury resort, the Four Seasons Resort, which is a wonderful resort, and it is definitely high-end, it's definitely one of those places, not just a destination, but you have arrived when you've stayed at the Four Seasons. I don't usually stay in those sort of places, but there are times when you can really appreciate it. When you go down on the beach and you get your lawn chair, your chaise, and your umbrella at no additional charge. And then, by the way, the two gentlemen down there who set up your beach chair will also bring you cold water periodically and a cold cloth those are the sort of times that I can appreciate what it's like to stay at that sort of resort. They have snorkel equipment there you can use for free. So I'm just saying it's something I could get used to. And then probably the oddest thing I did on the island of Lanai in terms of a vacation destination, one afternoon I went for a couple hours volunteering with the Lanai Animal Rescue Center. And the Lanai Animal Rescue Center, and I just put a blog post up on the Amateur Traveler about this, is caring for cats on the island who used to be abandoned or feral. So in the Hawaiian Islands, because the weather is so mild, when somebody abandons a cat, it doesn't necessarily immediately die. It can fend for itself for a while. And in the plantation days, it used to be that you often weren't allowed to have pets. And so someone would feed a cat, but they wouldn't own it. So they wouldn't get it spayed or neutered. And so you get a lot of cats on the island. So the Lanai Animal Rescue Center is caring for, in one location, in a 14,000 square foot open air compound, 310 cats. And I wouldn't say I'm a huge cat person, but I like cats well enough. And so what they look for is volunteers to come help socialize these cats. And what that really means is they're looking for volunteers. If you want to go help them keep the big kitty litter clean, that's fine. I was amazed how clean the place was, how well kept the cats were, how many names they knew of the cats, how many of these cats they had named and really knew the personalities from. But really what they're looking for is people to just come and pet cats for a while. And Kathy from the center, the president of the center, was saying that some people actually plan their vacation to Lanai because of the Lanai Animal Rescue Center. Basically, cat lovers, obviously, at this point, hear of this opportunity to volunteer on their vacation petting cats and plan their whole trip around it. They choose that island to go to in Hawaii because of that. So if you're a big cat lover, just something you should know. As I go to wrap this up, one of the things I forgot to say that's interesting about the two different four-season hotels on the small island is that they are basically one hotel in two locations. So there's one upcountry, as I said, and one at the beach. And the way it works is even if you take the shuttle from one to the other, you can still charge things to your room. Or if you're switching from one hotel to the other, which a number of people do, as I did, then you can just leave your bags in your room and they'll show up magically at the new room. So it really is treated like it's one different hotel. I found that to be very useful on my visit there. The other thing that I didn't say is I did get a Lomi Lomi massage. That's a full body massage. I've never done it before. I did not giggle through the whole thing, but I do find the whole experience of a massage to be strangely personal and also really incredibly relaxing. So it was a wonderful experience, but I still don't know that I would say that I'm comfortable massage, but I did enjoy it. With that, I think we'll be wrapping this up. And so I think it would only be fair, since I am doing the interviewing and the interviewee, to ask myself the final two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Lanai when what? And like so many of our guests, I find that a tough question. And I now have greater sympathy for the many guests who have struggled with this question. You really know you're in Lanai when you step out of a historic structure built by James Dole under the canopy of Cook Island pines planted by the earlier ranchers on a March night in what should be winter and don't even need a sweatshirt. And if I had to summarize Lanai in three words, I'd say tropical, rural, and luxurious. In news of the community, I had an extensive response from Barry Kramer on last week's episode about traveling to the Yunnan province of China. I won't read the whole thing, but let me read just this one snippet. We visited the majority of the places that Lee discussed in this podcast, and we can confirm that this is a unique and exciting region to visit in China. Our major reason to go there was to enjoy the scenic beauty, and while we indeed did find unrivaled beauty, we also fell in love with the culture and the people of the region. And then I also do get an answer from Rick about the question I asked on last week's episode in terms of how to play the Amateur Traveler on your TV from your iPad. And the answer is to buy the HDMI adapter for your iPad from the Apple Store. I believe you can also do this with AirPlay with the newer version, but you have to have an iPad 2 or later. And lastly, I heard from Brad about the episode about travel to southern Israel, episode 318. I sure enjoyed the information about Israel. Chandra did a wonderful job in describing the trip. I was jogging as I was listening to the show, and the time just zoomed by. I could picture in my mind the desert and all the places of interest she described. Thank you, Brad. I think the new tagline for the Amateur Traveler will be, listen to the Amateur Traveler and lose weight while you jog. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you want to contact me, you can leave a comment on the episode at amateurtraveler.com, or you can send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X, and as always, thanks so much for listening.